This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry, back here with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Recording early today, December 30th. Stocks have four more hours left to go in trading, bonds with another hour, but we wanted to get this out early today. Let's do our year-end recap here. Since markets are still moving, and they're still moving a little bit anyway, don't hold us to the basis point on some of these numbers, but we usually round anyway, so not too big of a deal.
Yeah, and I guess the bell hasn't rung, so the market's decided to just keep going and just keep inflicting some pain on this last day of trading for 2022. So a lot of red across the board, kind of in sync with what I'm seeing on the month-to-date basis here. But starting with the S&P 500, the S&P is down over 6% on the month, kind of just reversing last month's rally, a little relief rally that we had last month. It looks like we were up almost 6% last month. So just kind of undoing what happened in the month of November here so far, just before the close in December. Quarter to date, pretty strong quarter to date, up 7%. Still not enough to do much in terms of the pain that we felt on a year-to-date basis for the S&P 500. It looks like we're going to be closing down just under negative 20% on the S&P 500 right now. At the time of recording, I see it down 18.5%. Not much of a chance in the S&P 500 for the year. I did take a look to see. I think we reached our 2022 highs on the first day of trading in 2022. It was up 64 basis points on that first day. I believe it was the third or second. I want to say the 3rd of January was the first day of 2022, but it was up a whopping 64 basis points. And then we were in a drawdown during that from that day forward. So
does that mean we're going to have a new adage, sell after the first day of the year and go away?
I hope not. I hope not for 2023, man. Hopefully it was just that at least, you know, it'll be in the rearview mirror for some point here.
We always do like to say that, you know, you get the calendar resets and performance resets. And, you know, if you did a good job in 2022, you got to do it starts over. And so you got to do a good job again.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll get a little bit of reversal for 2023. It would have been nice to have a little bit of that hindsight and to say on that first day of trading 2022, to just annualize that, right? That's a 4 basis point high of the year. So since then, I mean, we all know that it's been a painful year. I saw that the lows of the year, the S&P 500 was down as much as 24% or thereabouts there. So we did have a little bit of respite from that. Again, 18.5 right now is what I'm showing down for the year to date. So we did come back a bit. But looking across the board here, a lot of pain on the year to date basis. We did manage to have two sectors finish in the green. Energy sector, as we've been talking about all year, has been, you know, very strong. It's right now it's up 64% on the year. Utilities, the distant second, up just under 2 percentage points for the year to date. And then on the flip side, we had two sectors that were down nearly 40 percentage points on the year to date basis. The worst one here is communication services, down about 38%. Right now, and consumer discretionary down about 36% right now here. And not much love through the other equity indices that we look at here for the US. Russell 1000, the large cap down 20% on the year. Russell 2000, the small caps, down also 20% on the year. And then when we look at growth versus value in the large cap stock sector through the Russell 1000 growth, that's down 30% on the year or so, and value outperforming quite significantly, but you know, unfortunately, it still has a negative sign in front, down almost 8% on the year to date through this time of recording right here. A lot of this, as we know, we've been talking about all week, or I'm sorry, all year, Jeff, is you know, what the impact of the Fed has had on markets across the board, not just in equities, but particularly in fixed income here, causing a lot of this pain. When I take a look across the Treasury yield curve, let's see here, the two-year Treasury up over 3.5 percentage points, starting out the year under 1%. It looks like on December 31st of 2021, the two-year Treasury had a yield of 73 basis points. As of right now, it has a yield of 4.4%. So definitely big moves at the short end of the curve, which are most sensitive to what the Fed monetary policy is doing. But if we take a look at the 10-year ended 2021 with a yield of 1.5%, and right now it has a yield of 3.8%. So definitely big moves there, a 2.3 percentage point increase in the 10-year Treasury yield. Similarly, in the long bond ended 2021 with a yield of 1.9%, and now it's standing at about 3.9. So pretty much across the board there, when we take a look at the yield curve at the end of 2021, you had a fairly steep yield curve, but everything was under the 2% yield mark. And now everything is just hovering right around 4% as we look to the close of 2022. And one point we were talking about this morning that the bond almost made its way to back to 4%. But here we stand at about 3.93%. percent for the year. So we still have some time. We have about just under 50 minutes left in trading for today. So we'll see where the long bond ends 2022 when we wrap up next week. But overall, when we take a look at this, definitely big ranges that we're seeing in swings here. I'll just rattle a couple off on some of these key points along the tenor. The two-year Treasury had a low of 76 basis points. I think that was on the first day of trading as well. And then the highs was out here in this past October at 4.73. The 10-year hit a high of 4.24%. And the long bond hit a high of 4.38% on the year. So definitely a lot of volatility in rates this year. And big swings in terms of the ranges that we've seen. So what all this led to in terms of the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate is it is down 12.75 or so on the year-to-date basis. It did regain a little bit of it over the quarter. Looks like a positive 1.9% on the quarter-to-date, but just wasn't able to manage much else outside of this negative almost 13% year-to-date performance for the Barclays Ag. And it's been pretty relentless, Jeff. I mean, I was looked back at it, and it only had three positive monthly prints this year. The rest of the nine were strongly negative, so it's no surprise to see that this is, I believe it's still the worst year on record for the Ag after what we've seen, despite that kind of positive quarter that we had.
Yeah, but, and definitely. It's like when we looked at a scatter chart yesterday, or I guess it was on Wednesday, of S&P returns versus the ag returns. And usually you want to be in upper right when both are positive, lower left, both negative. And obviously we're in the lower left quadrant this year, and the worst year by far. So when people look at like, oh, 60-40 portfolio, you know, down 16%, is not the worst year ever because the stock market isn't as bad, only down, 18.5, as you said, Sam. And you had worse in like 2008, but to have the combination of both stocks and bonds being so bad, and having that kind of almost an outlier type experience, given the Fed moves, I think it's certainly it's a year to remember, or a year that we will remember.
Yeah, it's a year I can't wait to get behind this in terms of financial markets here. So yeah. One thing is we did have a that meeting yesterday where we're looking at a few of these charts in the macro section. And I did note that the 2022, like you said, the 60/40 wasn't the worst year for performance of the 60/40 portfolio. I believe that record went to 2008. And as you mentioned there, the stock market being down much more than 18.5% that year, while stocks were bonds, I believe, were positive that year. But just that equity component being that massive drag on the 60/40 portfolio that year. But definitely, this is not a year that you want to see where you have double-digit type of negative signs on both your 60 and your 40 components of the portfolio there. But pretty much every sector within that we cover in terms of the broader fixed income universe was felt the pain here. Bank loans, the best performer, down about 2.5%. I think if you dive in within the various by credit ratings here, by ratings here within bank loans, you might have, if I remember, you might have had one sector or one component within there positive on the year, but I hadn't looked at it for about a week, so I wasn't sure if it maintained that. But if so, it would be close to positive, if not positive there. But on the other end of the spectrum, we had emerging market debt, the big loser, down about 18.5% on the year, and then IG corporate credit eking out just under negative 18% on the year to date. So if this holds right now, it will outperform U.S. equities. And we've joked about this a bit. We're, you know, it's kind of odd that we be talking about performance on the downside and comparing them between the S&P 500 and the U.S. investment grade corporate credit index. But here we are for 2022, both down, let's call it about 18% on the year. And then moving over to the commodity side, commodities had a good year. One of the positive asset classes for the year here. But looking at the BCOM broad basket of commodities here, I see that it is up 16% on a year-to-date basis. When we take a look at it here, it reached this high watermark, up 38%. Through pretty much the first half of the year. I think it was right around June is where we kind of saw, through March or April, where we saw that the highs were, yeah, the turmoil that resulted from the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but pretty much crickets in the second half of 2022. The BCOM was pretty much flat. I think it was down around 1 or 2% from June 30th forward to where we are today. So primarily all the action was in the first half. And then the second half was just really I guess you could call it a tug of war between fears around the macro on one side, fears around the recession. And then on the other side, you had concerns around diminished supply, around supply constraints there. So a pretty even tug of war in the second half of 2022 here.
Yeah, and certainly that, you know, tug of war should continue in 2023. I don't think we've had it. There's been no resolution either way. So I think we can continue to see whether recession and supply constraints or both are going to win out in the end.
That's right. That's right. It should be an interesting thing to follow in 2023. Looking at the WTI front month futures here, it looks like WTI crude oil is up about 5%. If we just take a look at that spot return, if you will, on the front month futures. But let's see, I'm trying to pull up this table that I had provided us earlier. But if we looked at a roll return here, and for those of us, those listeners who've been following Monday Morning Minutes for a while, or if you're new, perhaps you want to catch up on it, but Jeff and I dedicated a episode on the impact of roll returns due to the shape of commodity futures curve. And there we talk about backwardation and that bringing a potential positive roll return to commodity futures returns. So here, when we talk about that positive 5% on WTI front month futures, if you had actually invested in it and rolled the futures on a monthly basis, you would have actually seen about 25% positive return just from having that the shape of the curve being in backwardation due to some of the supply demand imbalance that we just talked about here, Jeff. But when we take a look at other components within that drove the broader commodity basket positive returns here, we take a look at the old heating oil contract, which now is ultra low sulfur diesel is the new underlying commodity under the HO contract here. But when we take a look at that, it had a spot return for the year of 40% thereabouts, but a investable return, if you rolled the futures there again, you would have had a return in excess of 100%. So that kind of is put some reality behind that backwardation episode that you and I recorded on January 14th of this year. So if listeners are interested in hearing more about that, you can go back and rewind the track and take a look at that episode there to get some more insight into what we're talking about here. But it looks like WTI crude oils on the front month future is going to just be shy of $80 a barrel here to close out 2022. Right now, I'm seeing 79.2 for a barrel of WTI crude oil. I did, just as a reminder, you know, it's just kind of a recap of 2000 of the year here. It did reach a high of 100, just under 131 bucks a barrel somewhere in the late February, early March, again, on the back of that Russian invasion in Ukraine. So we're definitely down quite a bit from those highs there. When we take a look at gold here, gold front month futures pretty much flat on the year. It just did a whole round trip of not much going on, but it started the year at a price of 1,828 bucks a troy ounce, and it's closing here right around 1,832. So I'd call that flat for the year. But I did notice in looking back over time that the front month gold futures contract did reach its all-time high, again, right around that Russian invasion of the Ukraine. It hit 2,079 bucks a troy ounce during that time period there. So that is an all-time high for gold. And we're just off of those highs by about 10% or so on that mark there. So definitely commodity futures were the interesting spot and the beneficial spot to be within financial assets for the year of 2022. Moving over to Bitcoin, Bitcoin has a whole lot of red around it, just, you know, depending on any one of these time windows that I'm looking at. On month to date, it's down over 3%, quarter to date, down about 15%, and year to date, it's the big loser here, down over 60% on the year to date basis. So that's the roundup for 2022 across these financial markets that we look at, including Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think if you took your Bitcoin and hedged it with your energy energy stocks, you probably, you know, if you did it equal weight, you'd be flat on the year. So
correct. That's right. So it's pretty interesting. I mean, here we are, you know, comparing Bitcoin to the energy sector of the US equity market, and we're also comparing IG corporate credit to the broader S&P 500. So, you know, hopefully we can leave some of these curiosities behind us in 2022 and look forward to a better 2023.
Yep, definitely. With that, let's take a look backwards again, just at what happened on the macro for the past couple of weeks. On December 22nd, we did get the GDP number, the third estimate. And, these estimates have been progressively more bullish or better for the economy. The third estimate there came in at 3.2%, was 2.9% from the first or from the second estimate. And I believe the first estimate was 2.6. So consecutive increases in terms of the annualized GDP number. On the 23rd, right before the Christmas holiday, we did get personal income and personal spending. Both numbers personal income came in at 0.4. So much stronger than, or a little bit stronger than the 0.3% that was expected. Personal spending came in a little bit weaker. This was for November at 0.1%, down from the 0.2% expectations. Then also on Friday, we got the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. The PCE numbers came in. They're a little bit, normally these numbers are spot on. And again, we had the month over month PCE come in at 0.1% as expected. The over year is down to 5.5. If we look at core though, that came in as expected at 0.2 month over month. And that brought the PCE core down to 4 points, or up slightly to 4.7%. So it wasn't really a bad number. It was kind of as people were expecting, and the market didn't move too much on that. And you know, obviously people are moving on the CPI numbers, because by the time PCE comes out, we have enough information to get a pretty accurate reflection of what we think the PCE number will be. And then this week, we only had really one data release that mattered. We had the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20 City Home Price Index, home price index month over month. This is for October. The number came out at negative 0.52, much better than the negative 1.15 that was expected. That brought the year-over-year number to 8.6. It was expected to be 8.00. So you're still seeing some deceleration or some decrease in home prices, but the rate is much slower than people were expecting. So maybe we're getting to more of a flatter in terms of your home price appreciation, but still not the absolute collapse that some people were projecting.
Yeah, definitely on the back of some of these higher rates as well. So it is nice to see that, although it's a kind of mid to high, but it's still nice to see this single digit print in front of the year over year numbers here instead of the double digits. So that's a bit of a relief for those who are, you know, still potentially thinking about getting a house, which I think many people are. Definitely some relief, at least on the price front, from a slowing of that acceleration. As we wrap up here, you know, things to keep an eye on next week on, let's see here, January 3rd, which would be Tuesday. Tuesday, we've got the S&P Global Manufacturing PMI that's coming out. That's the old market with the I index there, but that's expected to be flat versus the previous and the previous period. And that is, just as a reminder, in contractionary territory at 46.2. And then on Wednesday, we have the ISM manufacturing data. So back-to-back manufacturing pieces there. And it also is expected to remain in contractionary territory there, expected to move down from 49 on the previous month to 48.5 in terms of the early estimates that we have right now. And then the jobs opening data from the JOLTS survey there is expected to be just a little bit over 10 million, down slightly from the previous period. And then also on Wednesday, we do have the FOMC meeting minutes, so we can dive through all the details and see what the FOMC governors had to say during that particular meeting for December. And then on Thursday, we have the S&P Global again coming out, but this time for the services PMI, and that's also expected to be flat at 44.4. So either it's really going to be flat or people aren't just putting in that much effort with regards to their estimates this period of time.
That's what I was looking at. All the PMI numbers are like, yeah, we're just going to put in what happened last month. That's going to be our estimate for this month.
At least for the S&P Global portion of it. It looks like the ISMs have a little bit of difference, but not much. So, you know, perhaps a little bit of laziness there or just no opinion on the old market data. Maybe they're upset that the market of the FDI is gone in terms of the moniker. And then on Friday, we have Pizza Friday, aka Jobs Day. Non-farm payrolls are expected to be down at 200,000, down from 263,000 payrolls created the previous month. And Jeff, I remember we had heard from, I believe it was Greg Whiteley here on our governance team. He was saying that the Philly Fed came out with some research kind of questioning some of the past payroll gains that we've seen over the past few periods. But if that's true, that's definitely something to know, and perhaps that's something we can take a look at for our topic of the week in the new year. But then also on that Jobs Day, of course, we have the unemployment data as well. If the headline unemployment expected to be flat there yet again, in terms of a flat estimate here, but it's expected to be flat at 3.7%. for this upcoming period. And then the labor force participation rate is expected to tick up slightly up to 62.2 from 62.1 the previous period. And then finally wrapping it up on Friday here as well, we do have the ISM services, and that's expected to be down slightly to 55 flat, down from 56.5 the previous period. So starting out the year strong in 2023 for the first week there in terms of economic data to keep an eye on. So definitely some excitement ahead next week, Jeff.
It should be a busy week. And, you know, you had a lot of people who were, who maybe they're going to reassess their market, their positions here in the new year. And so I'm looking for some volatility here in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, a lot of people looking, or not a lot of people, some people are looking for this relief rally kind of to take shape in the first early part of the year, you know, probably as early as early as January here. So that's something for us to kind of watch and observe and see if that transpires.
That's right. And I guess that pretty much wraps it up for this week and for this year. And so I'd like to thank Sam. I'd like to thank you. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in.
Well, thanks, Jeff. I'd like to thank you as well. And I definitely like to just thank all of our listeners out there for listening to us and following us on Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't. Still have time left in 2022 to hit that subscribe button. So definitely hit it if you haven't already. And don't forget that you can pick up the latest episode each Monday before the bell. We should be available on all your favorite podcast platforms by now. But if you don't see us, or if you want us at some other platform, let us know. Also, if you have any comments or suggestions, or if you have a question that you want to submit for the topic of the week, you can feel free to email us at minutes@doubleline.com or to hit us up on the Twitter at DLine Minutes.
Also be remiss to not thank Eric for filling in probably double digit, maybe a dozen times over the year. So he's an honorary guest host.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks. Big thanks to Mr. Dahl for picking up our slack when we leave it.
That's right. Don't forget, you can find more information about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital. Our macro asset allocation team, which is kind of a sister team to our team, Sam, talked about their top 23 slides for 2023. So give that a listen and a watch there. And then also, I highly recommend the most recent episode of Channel 11 with Ken Shinoda and Jeff Sherman talking about, well, they're supposed to be talking about equities, but they went off on some commodity tangents a few times. So that was a good listen and a watch there. Make sure to follow Sam and Jeff Sherman on Twitter there at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great weekend and looking forward to a great 2023.
Yeah, thanks everyone. Happy New Year and stay safe out there and good luck.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Copyright 2022, DoubleLine.